So, Mark, you're saying that you are going to seize the opportunity of the airport that has appeared below you. You're going to spiral down and land to regroup. And you're doing this in service to personal minimums, minimizing risk and safety. But aren't you setting yourself up now for the pressure to get back out? You have to somehow depart this airport, or you're going to be stuck there, or you're going to have to find like a van to fit the daughter, the boyfriend, the dog, the stuff, everything that you've piled into this 210. So in other words, how much are you thinking about the getting out of Altus when you're making this decision to get in to Altus?
Not much, really. I think the situation is one where the safety considerations say we're going to stop now, and anything else of thinking about, well, we got to transport the dog and we have to do this and we have to do that, really just adds to a get their itis situation. And that has to be resisted. And I could say from a personal standpoint, I may have a record for diversions. And I think part of that was flying in the Mountain West, that very often when I was living in Colorado, you know, a thunderstorm would crop up, and these are 60,000-foot behemoths. And we have stopped at some of the strangest places, not knowing whether we would get out or not. So I think that's just an important decision that we have to key ourselves and ready ourselves for, of that, you know, if we make a diversion decision, that's what we're going to do.
JP, I see you nodding over there, like with energy here. You're clearly on the same page. How is this not a setup?
Well, I agree with Mark. I think what you go for, number one, is safety. I don't sit around and worry about, you know, what kind of car are they going to have? They're going to have a van. They're going to have whatever. Get on the ground, regroup, take a really in-depth look at the weather that you can't do up in the air, and come up with a good plan. Very few places here in the U.S. are you going to be stuck. I mean, there's going to be the ability to get out, and the whole deal with icing in an airplane not equipped for it, that is a scary place to be. And those options, to me, are off the table. I do not want to fly that airplane in any situation where I could start picking up ice. One thing that is a guarantee, I've got guaranteed great weather at an airport right there underneath me. I can land there, and it gives me the opportunity to come up with another plan and maybe wait it out, or something that gets me out of a situation that I am definitely heading into.
So you're going with door number one for sure. You can't tempt you to change. But Dave, you are not. You're going with option one. What's going on there?
Right. Well, I agree with JP that icing is really scary in a non-ice equipped airplane. But the ace in the hole the pilot has here is he's going to have excellent icing information going into the Texas area. You know, there's such a high volume of airplanes going into Dallas that can give real-time reports on the icing conditions. And so, you know, I'm going to rely on those sorts of icing reports. You know, we've been talking about fuel, you know, arriving at the destination with 18 gallons or, you know, and at least an hour and a half of fuel in VFR conditions is, to me, totally acceptable. And so as long as you can answer the icing question, which you should have really great information for, the fuel shouldn't be a problem.
You know, Catherine, you are taking the Altus out here, and there are really like two factors I've heard already that are weighing in people's minds. There's the icing and there's the fuel. And I know you have strong feelings about fuel. So which is it? What's making you spiral down and stop at Altus? Are you worried about the gas, or are you worried more about the ice at the destination?
Yeah, it's actually both. My personal minimum for fuel is at least an hour and a half. So I am bumping up against that and probably falling short of it. So that's just a no-go. And I've experienced icing in the past in a non-ice protected airplane. It is not fun. I don't go anywhere near that. So for me, it's the clear choice. You know, I usually think of driving as what other people do, but several times every year, it's what I choose to do. And, you know, most of my flights go off the way I plan them. But it's we don't suffer a couple times a year for making a decision like this. It's not the end of the world.
John, you are stopping at Altus, but you have in your mind that you're going to launch again and get to Meacham. 4/2. What's going on there?
So much like Mark, you know, I'm kind of the diversion king also. I'm not opposed to dropping in someplace. I think what you need here is some time to reformulate the plan. Check the weather again, get some gas, maybe make a phone call to home and say, hey, can you start heading northeast and maybe drive towards Meacham and I'll meet you there, or Denton or one of these other places. It's an hour drive by car and it's about an hour flight from Altus. So we could meet there, you could take the kids and maybe I'll bring the plane home by myself. You know, it gives me a whole lot more options, and I don't have the bandwidth to be able to do that while I'm at altitude, to coordinate all this stuff and figure this all out. So I'm not opposed to making a diversion. I mean, I can remember one 135 trip that I had back when I was doing that. It was a six-leg trip, and I made one of the six actual airports that we were supposed to go to with five diversions. So, you know, sometimes just stuff happens, and you got to do it. So it just gives me a whole lot more options.
Let me stick with you for a little bit longer, John, because you are really planning to keep going after this stop, more so, it seemed, than other folks at the table. How are you going to do that? Like, what is your plan? For lack of a better word, you're doing a contact approach, kind of spiraling down over the airport here. Are you going to do like a contact departure, hoping that it doesn't close up?
Or I got to figure that out. Okay. And if I get stuck on the ground, I get stuck on the ground. I'd rather be stuck on the ground than, you know, the old adage about being in wishing where you were. I'll figure that out. I might have to go east a ways, and maybe around the east side of the Metroplex, something. But it's going to give me a lot more options to figure it out when I'm on the ground. Worst case scenario, we're stuck there for a while, but at least we're stuck on the ground.
Tom, we haven't heard from you yet, and you, like Dave, are continuing. You're going to continue for the Dallas area. What's your thinking, and why is that the better choice for this pilot in this situation?
Right. Well, there's really kind of three things we're dealing with here, right? Crosswinds, fuel, and ice.
And, it's a good day.
And so, yeah, right. Sounds like a good scenario. crosswinds we've accepted. We've determined that the airplane and I are pretty good at this. Fuel, we have some concerns about, but I agree with Dave, you know, in a 210 arriving with, you know, 18-ish gallons or so is okay. And the ceilings and, you know, the weather at the airport, at least currently, is not that bad. And then there's the ice. And, you know, if you look at the icing probabilities, which, you know, I found to be actually really helpful, and that's really not perfect, but certainly really helpful in planning, and the broken cloud layers, that sort of thing, that the idea of being able to get down through there is, you know, I think there's a pretty, you know, a good chance that things are going to work out fine. You're really not going to get into the ice. It's a fairly small area. And you do have, as Dave pointed out, you do have a lot of traffic coming in and out of there for which you would presumably, hopefully, get some good pyrips about what's actually going on. So I think all of those things stack up to being this is a, you know, a reasonably safe choice of going on to Mineral Wells and not having to cross the Metroplex and get caught up in potentially the traffic there and potentially running into a bigger fuel issue by doing that. Certainly Altus is a really safe choice, nothing wrong with that, but I think it you know, is maybe a little more conservative than I would be.
Well, let me stay with you for a second then, Tom, and I'm going to try a little horse trading here because nobody picked the option two or option three. It was all in for land now or all in, I'm heading for my destination. So let me try option two here for a second of just a slight diversion to Meacham, right? You're going to basically pass right by Mineral Wells. You've got like almost another hour before you get there for time to update. And it's going to have you, sure, a little bit closer to the Metroplex, but it'll have you at least on the west side, maybe even heading for the south side if that's now your destination, right? Because we brought you in a little bit closer. Doesn't that kind of buy you all those airports along that side? Like you can change now, slightly head for Meacham and be like, oh, the weather's actually came up at Mineral Wells. I'm changing my destination back to Mineral Wells. Or I stick with Meacham, or like, ooh, that started to cloud in too. I'm going to keep going now around the south side of the Metroplex and get over to Executive because they've kind of already got me going in that direction. Tempt you at all on that, Tom? That like kind of keep your more options open there?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's not a bad option. And certainly there's little risk in doing that because, as you say, if you get in that neck of the woods and it seems like the weather at Mineral Wells is actually better than you thought or it's picked up, you can make the choice then to go back over there.
Dave.
The only thing tempting about Altus is that I would want to drop off this passenger and his dog because it's like anybody who takes an hour to get on board the airplane with his stuff and his dog, obviously not son-in-law material. Done with him, you know, we're moving on. But it's, yeah, I don't find options two or three tempting at all.
Not tempting at all.
And all in or all out.
All in or all out. John, is it possible, is that a good way to kind of work the system, do you think? Or is that the kind of thing that would just backfire on you? A destination, you'd be like, yeah, I just want to kind of make sure I don't get vectored crazily across Dallas. So I'll pick a destination kind of on that southwest corner. I'll aim for that, and that'll kind of give me that whole zone. Is it worth playing the system?
Yeah, it could be. You know, once the flows are probably similar for those satellite airports, but to get from the west side over to the east side is probably going to be impossible. You know, I think a lot of this comes down to, we always talk about it, is personal minimums. And I think everyone's got different comfort levels. There's not a lot of black and white in our minimums. You know, some people say, well, I can take a trace of ice, or I can take moderate ice, or, you know. So what's your personal minimums for ice? Zero or some exposure? All of this is kind of gray, you know, and I think a lot of it has to do with the different people sitting around the tables, experience level, comfort levels, and those somehow morph into minimums too. Some people would take this on and some people wouldn't.
JP.
Yeah, I'm all about risk mitigation, and the Altus, at least stopping there for a time being, or maybe that is your new destination. If you're going to consider flying to one of these other airports, what I think it eliminates is the fuel issue. Now you can take on the fuel, so that is one component of that pressure that's going to be taken away. And that's going to make me feel a lot better because now I'm not so worried about, well, if this doesn't work, this doesn't work. Now I've got the fuel situation taken care of. And there's no better place to regroup than on the ground, than trying to make all of those decisions while navigating an airplane and talking to ATC and dealing with passengers and everything else. And with connectivity on the ground, you're going to have a lot better weather information. I just think that's a smarter way to do that. I don't necessarily think the other choices are not going to work, but for me, that's the one that's going to work for me.
Mark.
One of the things about getting down and regrouping is that you really don't know what your ultimate decision is going to be. You're really deferring it. We had one where we were flying down, myself and a friend and his wife and my wife, flying down to southern New Mexico for a fly-in get-together. And on the way down, we were down past Albuquerque already, and we see up ahead the weather is just turning bad. And the thing about thunderstorms in the Mountain West is they don't get better. They're going to get a lot worse. And we wind up diverting to one of those airports where there were no choices. I mean, we would literally be stuck at an FBO if we wound up there. What we wound up doing was, well, the weather was still good where we just came from. So we effectively made a 180, went up to Albuquerque and had a wonderful weekend in Albuquerque because nobody else made it to our destination either. So, you know, deferring the decision until you're down on the ground and able to make it really just pays a lot of benefits.
I want to stay with you, Mark, because I love this idea of the en route alternates and making this rolling decision on a flight. But Altus was a gift. It just appeared below you, right? Without that, the original plan here was to fly over the top of a layer that the pilot absolutely did not want to descend through for hours at a time. Two-part question. Do you think, now not being the scenario pilot, being yourself, was this an unreasonable flight to take because there essentially wasn't really an option for en route alternates on this flight? This was like a long over water flight that way. And two, if that's not true, if there were en route alternates, what would you be looking for in that? How would you plan a flight like this if you wanted to do it with this concept of having outs?
I think what you wind up doing is what we did as student pilots planning a VFR flight. We think in terms of, well, we're going to go straight, but then we start looking at airspace. We start looking at terrain. We start looking at what the options are. And I think if we had no options other than flying over an icing layer, then maybe the decision is we better wait till tomorrow. We better save the day and go another time. The other possibility is to find a route where you avoid those, even if that route is a little bit longer, and even if that route requires a fuel stop along the way.
Let me turn to you, JP, and you were talking about the forecast icing potential on this. The potential of icing is actually pretty low, particularly at the destination here. How accurate are those kinds of things? How much could a pilot say, you know, the FIP said it's like 15 to 25% zone. Probably, that means there's a 75% chance or better there will be no icing. Is that like a reasonable way to approach that? And that's, you know, that's pretty good odds for coming down.
You know, I think the accuracy of those reports or that data the day of when you are making the trip or what you're receiving inside the airplane with some of the data link weather is very accurate, because how that is put together is from weather soundings, whether they're model soundings or some of the soundings that are released from the airports, the weather balloons. So a lot of that's either a combination of real-time data or you're looking at high-resolution computer models. So when it shows that temperature profile all the way up through that cloud layer is below zero, and that is your potential for icing, it's pretty good. It's pretty accurate information there. What would be kind of your saving grace in this? It's not apparently a very thick layer, so getting down and expediting that coming down, you're probably not going to pick up that much ice. But the problem I have with this is, in an airplane that doesn't have the ice protection, I hate gambling on probably not going to pick up that much ice. But it's not a situation where I would have canceled the trip. I would have probably, like Mark said, planned it a little bit longer route to take me out of that potential for icing.
So just go around this whole thing, do a three-leg day, basically, instead of this long two-leg day. Of course, with, you know, the dog and everybody on board and the motivation to get there.
Yeah, and one other thing, you're talking about alternates. You know, alternates don't cost anything. And people always talk about, you know, I'm an instructor, and they talk about the 1-2-3 rule and all of this. I stick an alternate in there all the time, because it doesn't have to be weather. You're going somewhere and somebody has a flat tire on a runway and the airport's shut down, or there's something that's non-meteorological related. I stick it in there so I have already a place in my head. Okay, if this doesn't work out, here's where we're going to go.
And that alternate, that's like a real world alternate. So when you're making that decision, do you even think about the whole what I need for fuel per the FAR? Is that a legal alternate kind of thing? Or is it more a, you know, this is the place I'm going to go if something goes wrong?
It's going to be a combination of both. It's going to be the legal, the FARs, and also what's going to be most convenient and still stay within that box of the FARs. And there's generally going to be some place where you can make that work. And the rolling alternates, I do that all the time. So I'm flying along, coming up here, for example. This was a long trip for me. And
you came from Birmingham.
From Birmingham
up to New Hampshire.
To Nashua, New Hampshire. Encountered headwinds that were way stronger than forecast. And obviously that's started, I'm working, I got a fuel totalizer, but I'm in there doing the hand calculations, making sure this is working out. And it started eating into some of my personal minimums. And I said, okay, if this is where we are and these headwinds don't get better, I'm stopping here. And that's what I did. I think you always need to be looking at that data en route to come up with that plan. You never want to box yourself in. And I think sometimes people box themselves in and it's really stressful to get out of that.
You know, I'm going to step away from the meteorologist for a second because you'll have an unfair advantage on the next question here, which is this pilot was basically looking at a TAF from an airport 30 miles away for a flight that was going to be 3 hours long. Looked good, and they're going. This feels a little inadequate to me. What should this pilot have done? What are the other resources that are out there that any of you might have used? John, you were talking about, you know, formerly flying charter and having these situations where you were diverting, you know, left and right. I'm sure you had destinations where there was no TAF. Poor flight now tosses in, like, here's a TAF for you. It's 75 miles away to the northeast. Is that reasonable? What's missing here?
Well, all right, so first of all, there are a lot more products available today than 10 years ago that just gives you so much more information. It gives you information that's accessible in the cockpit. You can look up on your iPad now and you can get a lot more information. But that still goes back to my decision to get on the ground in Altus and do a deep dive into this and really try to figure out what my options are in the forecast products, mainly because of those gaps in the TAF and in that data, and maybe even the decision to back up even farther on this trip and have these go, no-go decision points. Maybe the point to make this diversionary stop was even an hour before Altus. And have that kind of that rolling decision point that JP was talking about in mind.
Mark?
I think one of the things that Datalink Weather gives us is the ability to monitor what's going on along the way. You know, as you're flying down, you have a TAF from, you know, 12 hours earlier or whatever it is, but you can kind of see along the way how conditions are changing, whether it's consistent or inconsistent with it, so you kind of do that. I remember one diversion we did, there were thunderstorms forecast for our destination, and we're heading toward them. They were predicted to come in well after the time that we were supposed to land, and we're just keeping an eye on ForeFlight and just keeping an eye on the weather, and we saw the system was moving quicker than we expected. And we saw that so far in advance, it was kind of like, okay, we are going to divert and land. The question is where and when. Here are our options. We eventually picked one. We landed, and I still have the video of that thunderstorm coming through that airport, and it's fantastic. But we're on the ground comfortably with like 15 minutes to spare.
John?
You know, the ForeFlight ability to have all that Datalink weather. One of our last trips to Florida, I was looking at a large area weather. And when you go down the East Coast, you know, you've got the ocean on one side. So you're really kind of up against the wall there. You can't divert any further east. And I was looking at this large area of salad, you know, red and yellow and everything. And actually, on the iPad, I drew a line with the annotation. And I said, if it touches that line, I'm landing. And that was my go, no-go point, because that line that I drew on there was 20 miles to the west of my course. It touches it, that's it, I'm done. You know, so that kind of gave me a tool there also to look at.
And I like that. I like that objective way of taking like a very kind of visceral feeling, right? And being like, okay, well, here's the line. The decision is made. It's sort of like a personal minimum, literally drawn on the fly, right? Like that makes a lot of sense. Tom?
Yeah, we're talking about from a pre-flight planning standpoint, you know, you got TAFs kind of scattered around, some and not always very nearby. You know, MOS, you know, available through ForeFlight can be helpful. There are a lot more of those around there, and again, not they're not perfect by any means, but neither is a TAF. But I'd be curious JP's thought on that and whether that's a good solution and how accurate are they.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Tom. I was thinking exactly that's where pilots are probably going to go with ForeFly. They're going to go to MOS. That stands for Model Output Statistics. What you're looking at there is raw model data. Back when I first got into TV weather, we used those numbers to help us build a seven-day forecast or hour-by-hour forecast. It's no human hands have touched that. That's just model data. It's guidance. It's going to give you something because a TAF that far away, that old, is not sufficient for what you're trying to do. But I would look at that MOS data. In addition, there's some sites out there readily available to anybody where you can look at these high-resolution model temperature profiles, and you can pick out where those icing layers are. So you can take a look at that. It's a lot, and it doesn't have to be at an airport. It can be, you can just click a location on a map, and you can get that virtual sounding. It's like a little weather balloon was released right there from the model data. And that's going to give you a good idea. In addition, some of the more consumer-level tools that we have now on ForeFly and some of the other products out there, you have that profile view, and you can add that icing layer. That icing layer looks like magic, but where that's coming from is actually that model data that you would look at maybe in a SKU-T or something like that, so you can see how thick that is. But keep in mind, even with a TAF, TAF is a National Weather Service forecaster writing that TAF. Model data is model data. None of that is perfect, but you put it all together, and it's some pretty good guidance to make those decisions.
Let me stick with you for just one more specific TAF question. You may or may not have the answer to this, but I know with TAFs, we've heard that there's pressure on forecasters, if it's a commercial airport with a TAF, to avoid thunderstorms like right over the airport and the forecast or certain other conditions. Just because the airlines coming in then have to change the amount of fuel they're carrying and their alternates and that kind of thing. Are there other factors that go into a TAF like that besides really thunderstorms, you know, that affect that might tweak the TAF one way, and there are things that really should be there, but they're not because there's pressure on those
now,
lines?
Now, the National Weather Service meteorologists that I personally know that write the TAFs, I don't really feel like they have a bias one way or the other. It's really in the interest of safety to write that TAF. Now, I'm not saying that couldn't happen, but they are using the data they have to come up with the forecast for that period of time for that location. So if it's going to be thunderstorms, if it's going to be low visibility, that's going to be included in that TAF in, you know, 90% of the cases, if not all.
Before I let this conversation go, there's one more thing I just want to cover, which is, as I said, Altus was a gift, right? We often don't get the gifts. In fact, it seems like more often than not. So now all of you are in the back of Dave's plane, and you're welcome to kibitz here. We have to continue because there was no hole below potential to land. And you were heading there anyway, Dave, as were you, Tom. How are you going to deal with the descent into mineral wells when you get closer and you find, yep, it's 2,000 overcast? There, Meacham, are you going to, one, take the approach so that you can get below the clouds, even though potentially passing through icing? Or are you going to be like, man, I'm just going to power back for economy cruise, and I'm just going to get to the other side where I can get a VFR letdown, even though it means potentially low fuel on landing? We'll start with you, Dave. How are you going to handle it? You going through the clouds?
I'm going through the clouds. I'm, you know, I mean, en route, I'll save as much fuel as I can. But during the descent, you know, I would want to delay the descent into the clouds as late as possible. I would want to fly fast, you know, for less icing accumulation, and then I just want to get on the approach, execute it, and. In this situation, I have good confidence that it's like, I'm not going to be landing in icing conditions. It'll be in, you know, clear of the clouds below 2000.
And with the possibility that icing isn't going to happen, are you just preemptively like, I'm going to come down like, you know, a bag of anvils here,
yeah, I mean,
all the way to the final approach fix, or a dive and drive kind of approach? Or is it more that you're spring loaded to descend more quickly, but until ice begins to accumulate, you're going to keep things fairly stable? What's your strategy?
Yeah, I'll have good up to the minute, you know, pi reps, And then, and based on that, I'll execute the rest. It doesn't have to be a, you know, a plummeting sort of approach, but it's like the controllers are often really helpful with this, that it's like you just let them know that you want to delay the approach as late as practicable. And then, and you'll be keeping the speed up during the approach.
JP's nodding along that. There seems to be general nodding around the table. Anyone like starting to throw stuff at Dave from the back of the 210 being like, no, do it VFR here.
They would have bailed out in the airplane in Altus, so I'd be all by myself, right? Except for Tom. Tom and I will be up there together.
And into mineral wells, absolutely. Well, it's interesting because on this scenario, I think you summed it up really well, Tom. There are multiple factors that are going in here. We've got the icing we were worried about. We had the fuel situation that we created here. We had a long day of flying and all of these things that are working together to create a situation. And if I could rename this scenario, it's like the ballad of 11 gallons of gas, because this pilot burned 11 gallons of gas going from Laramie to Boulder. And even though that's 11% roughly of what this airplane can carry, something along those lines, it seems like that might make all the difference for people to just have that little bit more to guarantee if it didn't work out at Mineral Wells, even if you were vectored around the Metroplex area. I feel like just about everybody might say, yeah, a little bit more gas, I would keep going, because that's what keeps the options open. Just that little bit more fuel.